You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games, the player who played them and the gamers who game them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And I'm Aviv Manoach.
Because today we don't have an Uri Lifshitz, he's... Who knows? Who knows where Uri is? Roll perception.
He's off on an adventure.
Instead, we have an Aviv. And Aviv is our third dwarf. You don't really get to hear him all that much. Unfortunately, he has so much good things to say. So today, when Uri is not here, we manage to sneak in a bit of Aviv. And what is the topic you want us to talk about?
Well, Eran, I wanted to tell you that after... About 3 years, I went back to actually playing in front of real people in real life, because for the past 3 years, most of my role playing was via online chat, text chat. I've been running, that's the third campaign, I think, in that medium. And that's what we are going to talk about today.
Playing through text chat. And that's important to mention the text part, because chat can mean so many things in these days, this day and age of electrical communication. So what is actually a chat game? There are a lot of people who play through forums, for example. That's called play by forum or play by email or play by post. We're not talking about those. We're talking about using something like Discord, which is an app that allows you to chat with other people in your own server, in your own channels. You have a lot of control over who can join a server and what they can do in the server. And it's quite popular these days. There's a lot of servers dedicated specifically for role playing. I don't do it, but that's all that Aviv does, except for, again, these days, finally you came back to a tabletop group, etc. How does it work and why to do it and how to do it?
But you did, Eran, you did in the first incarnation of this system we played
yes.
through Hangouts. And you were one of my players for this first campaign. And the reason we chosen Hangout originally was because Google implemented dice rolling into the Hangout system.
Yes.
So after, I don't know, halfway through the second campaign, I think, my group moved to Discord because it had some more features that we wanted. However, Discord didn't have a built-in dice roll at the time, but Discord, it is a very easy system to expand, and you have a lot of different custom bots to do whatever you want. So I found one, it's called Sidekick, and added it to my server, and it does everything for us. And we are specifically playing a Power by the Apocalypse game, so you just need 2d6s and maybe some damage dice for Dungeon World, but it knows how to do fate dice and more storyteller D10s type of thing, and whatever you want, a lot of options. I think that the important thing to focus on here is that this is unlike play by post or play by email, etc. This is real time game. We set a time, a schedule, a fixed schedule like any other group. We play every Friday morning for my first group. Now we have a second group that play every Monday night. And we get together for about 3 hours. We do all the things that regular group does. We talk out of play, we have jokes and stuff, and so unlike some people that play online games, they try to put more focus on the actual game because it's a limited time, and it's a bit more of an effort for some people to play online. We try to make it more like a regular face-to-face game and make it less committal, because it's actually started as a way for us to play on the off hours when we did other things when we are at work or where we are taking the kids to kindergarten. I have a couple of players who do that. They continue to play the game on their mobile phone while they are doing something else, etc. So it's important to us to keep the casual nature of the game.
Yes, that was one of the reasons that we've started this, because we wanted to play, but we didn't actually want the full responsibility that comes with the game.
Yes.
We call it something like fluid obligation. I mean, yes, you are supposed to be here with us and spend some of your energy and mental space on what we are doing, but you're not required to spend all of it. You are chatting while we assume you do something else. But that changes between a person and a person. And it does mean that someone who is more into the game, who sits down in front of the Discord, and that's most of what they do, will get to act more in the game. The thing is, we're fine with people who act less in the game. Unlike, for example, around a tabletop, where I would generally expect everyone to be in the game and no one to do anything else. No looking at your phones or stuff like that. It's weird to me that people who sit around the table would do anything besides be into the game as an audience, as a participant, as something. You sit there and you are with us. Here, it's the exact opposite. Does that work?
Well, for me as a GM, of course, it's a bit of a more strict obligation because I'm in charge of running the game and making it work. I find that the medium, the technical aspect of it, helped me to keep people engaged even if they are doing something else. For example, in Discord, what you can do is tag people to get their attention, what we couldn't do in Hangouts, for example. One of the issues we have with playing a text game is that all you see in front of you is a giant wall of text. It's all in one place. You can't split your focus between people like you can do face to face. So it's one of the important thing is to keep track of who said what, and for me the GM to put the spotlight in the proper way. So people can tell me, okay, I'm only half listening at the moment because I'm doing something, that's fine. And when I need their cooperation or for them to do something, I will tag them. And sometimes we'll keep going and let somebody else do something in the meantime. And sometimes it will be a very important thing. So we will wait a couple of minutes, and it's not a problem because that's part of the expectation management we put when we started this game. So okay. Everybody know that it's fine if someone is only half listening, because that's what we agreed about to begin with. But it was still important for us when we started all of this to set a proper time and schedule for the session, to not turn it into a play by post, because then you run into the issue of people are even less committed to the game. And unless you have some players that really, really, really into play by post, my experience was that these games tend to fizzle out. So we have a happy medium in between.
So how does the standard chess session actually look like? How does it begin? What goes out through it, and how does it end?
For the campaign that is already going on, it starts by me pasting the summary from the last session, which I usually do by just going through the messages and copy-pasting important passages, another advantage of this medium, because everything is there. You have a perfect record of everything you did down to the specific dice roll. So yes, it's a lot of information, but it's all there. You don't need to rely exclusively on your memory. Discord also has a search function as well as the Hangout Gmail, so you can find things you may have lost. Then we continue from the point we ended up last time. Before that, usually our session start at, for example, 9:30. People will get into the chat room a couple of minutes earlier. We'll talk about the events of the week, like normal people that know
regular socializing.
Yeah, exactly. And then once I make sure everyone is here and the time has arrived, and I will paste the summary and we'll start playing. And sometimes in between we'll take someone will need to go to the bathroom or grab a coffee or something, and they will tell us so that we know why they are not answering at the moment. But it usually just straight through 3 hours gaming until we get to the end, and the end we do all of our games have some sort of end of session process, moves, whatever. So there is a very clear way to end the session. We have some bookkeeping to do, and usually we will talk about the next session if everybody can attend, and we will do some more socializing and everybody will go on their way. It's very standard, like a regular gaming group sitting at a table just in front of our computer or phone or whatever.
Sure, but there are some differences. So for example, in Discord you can have different channels and you can chat in different channels. Do you use different channels for different things during the same session?
Sporadically, we have a separate channel. We have the main channel, we call it sessions, and then we have a channel called In Character Discussion. And sometimes if we have one or more character that wants to develop a conversation or a situation or something like that, relies less on GM engagement, they will move to the other channel and do that there. Actually, yesterday in our session, we had for the first time, I split the conversation between two sessions because one was the main scene of the game and the other was as I said, we are playing Mask and New Generation superheroes, and our telepath wanted to have a telepathic conversation with one of the NPCs, and I started by telling him we'll do it later because I didn't want to pull focus away from what was happening at the moment that was kind of intense. But it was close to the end of the session, so I didn't want to miss the opportunity altogether. So we moved the discussion to the other channel, and it actually ended up being at least as important. So by the end of the telepathic conversation, I took a block of text I wrote and moved it back to the main channel so that the rest of the group will be aware of that, because I thought it was important.
So were they able to read the other channel, or was it like a private message routine?
We keep sometimes we have a private message discussion between me and the players if I want to tell them something in private, if they want to tell me something that the group doesn't need to know, stuff like that. But the regular playing channels are open for the entire group. They are actually open for our entire server because we allow spectators. And it's funny because since I started the new group, which doesn't have all of the players from the old group, some of the players are reading the other campaign, which they are not participating in. So it's nice.
Everything that you've said so far seems to be really contingent on the fact that you are playing a Powered by the Apocalypse game. Because in a regular tabletop session that uses D&D or Pathfinder, combats take a lot of time. And combats are turn after turn of rolling dice and doing tactical decisions, and most of the time using some sort of a map, even if you don't use miniatures, having some sort of a diagram on the table so everyone will know who is where and why is important. This does not at all seem to work with what you are suggesting here. For people who don't know, in Powered by the Apocalypse games, there's no such thing as combat. It's not a different minigame inside the game. When there's an action scene, it resolves exactly as any other scene. You use a move, usually even the same moves you would use in other scenes. You roll 2d6s, you add something, you decide on something, and there's a story resolution that continues, and something happens in the game world. But there are no turns, there's no initiative, there's no hit points, and there's no actual relevance to location. I mean, there might be, but it's not more relevant than in any other part of the game. Saying, yes, I can see them, yes, they are away from you, they are very near to you, might be enough in a Powered by the Apocalypse game.
So, A, Dungeon World does has hit points.
Yes.
And B, we did have entire sessions dedicated to combat in Dungeon World. It happened.
Sure, but did you use a map?
For specific battlefields, no, but I will say that you technically can use Roll20 in the same way you can create a game in Roll20 and use their chat to do everything we do with a map and with the dice roller. So,
sure, but we are talking about, again, very fluid obligation. Like, for example, you can use Discord to chat with voice, to talk to each other. You can use Discord, that's, I think, one of the main things people use Discord for yep. voice chat. So you can do that, but you don't, because that's not what your aim is here. I think that my point is, Powered by the Apocalypse games and games like it are very well suited for chat games, while I think that way more tactical games, games that focus on the number of actions you have per turn and who gets to act before whom, is probably require more obligation and probably require people to pay more attention to what is going on and therefore use Roll20 and use voice and use more sophisticated dice roller or even online character sheets and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's true. There are some sessions, more in Masks than in Dungeon World. Dungeon World does a very good job of mixing the type of action you are familiar with D&D and stuff, and the more narrative style of game for Powered by the Apocalypse. So you tend to have more dice rolling and moves and stuff like that. I find that in our Masks campaign, there are sessions that we... I don't know, last session we rolled 4 times in the entire session, something like that, and the rest was, it could have been a free form for all we know. There wasn't any...
there weren't any moves that you acted on.
For an outsider observer that read it, he couldn't have known that we are actually using any system. The system does infer the players because they know what type of character they are and they know what condition they have. So if they are angry or I don't remember the English terms for the game because we're playing with the Hebrew translation. So those mechanics help the players inform the roleplay, but there aren't a lot of dice rolling when we play sometimes. When there is a high action scene, there are many dice rolls.
Okay, so let's get into the issues, the problems, the minuses, the negatives. Because, as far as I remember, one of the main problems of this format is that you don't actually get to play a lot. You don't actually get to achieve a lot in the 3 hours that you invest in it. It's pretty slow.
Yeah, that can happen. There's no doubt it's slower than... playing face-to-face by the restrictions of having to type everything and talking is faster. So things that could have taken a few minutes in real time takes maybe 10x that when playing in text. And there are some sessions where we barely managed to have one car ride with a discussion among the player, and then one other scene, and then it's over. But over time, we do manage to cram a bit more into it. As I gained experience with the format, with the medium, I managed to do all sorts of trick to cut scenes off or push together a bunch of things so you don't need to pay attention to each of them individually. We can do them all together and stuff like that. But yes, and the bottom line is it's a slower format of game. And since we mentioned before about not being able to split your focus unless you do the thing with multiple channels, that it's harder anyway. If in a normal session I can have a conversation with two players at the same time and each of them does something and stuff like that, here it's very easy to get lost in the wall of text while you're playing. And there are times that one of the players will keep writing something and I will stop them. I will tell them that I will get to them, but we are focusing on something else right now, so let's wait a couple of minutes and return to them, stuff like that.
Because you can only do one thing on the wall of text. By chronological order, there's a message after message after message, and you just can't... That's just the way it goes. So what are the positives? What things do you gain from playing this way, except for the fluid obligation part? Well, one thing that I really like is the style. Because when you can write down text, you have time to style it in whatever mm-hmm. form you want. And it can be pretty awesome. It can be stuff like, Jorgen looked at the scene with horror. He stood there taking it all in before daring to take a first step into the room. And stuff like that. Stuff that I would not say in a tabletop game. Because, first of all, it's a bit weird. for me at least. I mean, my style in a tabletop game is way more I do X and Y, Z, and explain exactly what I do and behave in a way and not explain the way that I behave in. But I do enjoy it. And, well, maybe I should actually start doing it more in tabletop. But in text, it happens almost automatically. In text, it almost happens by itself. Because I think we think like in a novel. We think, we have this, at least I do, and maybe your players as well, have this feeling that because I write it down, I can make it look way more like a fantasy novel.
Yeah, exactly. It's also part of the thing with the slower pace, because since you take the time to write everything, you might as well write it nicely. When I'm talking a face-to-face game, I usually want to keep the pace up and keep talking and not stop and think on how to stylize my dialogue right now. Sure. But in text, it's very easy to do. And of course, technically, we can do things like italics and bold. And Discord have a markdown that you can use. For example, they actually implemented a quote block. So now when I do dialogues, I actually put them inside a quote block to differentiate them from the rest of the text. So that's nice. Also, in our superhero game, we have a lot of things with computer system and virtual worlds, and sometimes I will write text in a style that looks like an old computer terminal, and it will help the immersion. And in our fantasy game, I will use Google Translate to give the players text in foreign languages that they are not supposed to be familiar with. All those tricks that you can do with text and you can't, or at least you can do with face-to-face voice or online voice, but it will take a lot more effort on your part.
The slower pace allows you to take the time and go to Google, go to a fantasy name generator, go to a fantasy in generator. You go to and look for an image that seems relevant and upload it.
Write a run, ask him what I should do in the session while planning it.
Yes, I get messages through Hangout from Aviv telling me what is currently happening and asking for advice. And you have the time, so sure.
And the other major part is being able to use rich media, multimedia sources. That's of course also true for voice online games, but it's true for our game as well. I will paste maps. I will paste images of monsters and enemies, and of course we can very easily send each other character information and system information. Every time a player doesn't remember one of the moves, I will do a screen capture from the player aid and paste it so everybody could see, or even copy paste and put it in a nice message, stuff like that. So there is a lot you can do with the very nature of the technology to help you run the game.
Excellent. So in summary, what do you think about, now that you have so much experience, what do you think about this style of game? What would you recommend for a person who is only getting into it as a player or as a GM? And where do you see this going forward?
Well, for me, that's my preferred style of game at the moment, just because it fits the best with the rest of my life. It's easy to schedule, it is easy to do. I can do it while doing other things for work or whatever. I don't need to sit even for an online voice game. I don't need to sit and close my room and make sure I'm not interrupting anybody and stuff like that. So I'm going to keep doing it as long as there are players that wants to play with me. That's from my perspective. For new players, don't think about it as a chat game. Come to it like any other game, because most of the time it is. Just remember that to be patient, because sometimes it will take a bit more for the GM to get to you. It's important to have an understanding among the group that, like we said, things take more time. So don't be mad if you are overlooked. That's also one of my problems. Sometimes I overlook messages from players and they need to remind me. That's normal, that's fine. Just keep that in mind and everything will be okay.
I would also suggest be proactive, because the game is generally slow, because you don't manage to get a lot of things done in a session, and because the GM might not be aware of what you are trying to do. Be proactive, engage, push your character to do stuff.
Since you can always just type whatever you want before sending it in the program itself, or in a document or something, you can prepare in advance everything you want to do or ask or whatever. So when the GM is paying attention specifically to you, don't need to delay the game even more. You have everything ready. That's an advice we give for a face-to-face game as well. Be ready to act when it's your turn.
And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our personal lives, and I don't actually have a lot to add from my life, because nothing much happens. I'm still very much enjoying reading Hell's Rebels. It's an excellent, pretty amazing, really, adventure path. It's the sort of thing that makes me look at the writer names and search for them, because I want to see more. I want to see what these guys and girls have been doing besides this, because it's excellent work, really. It's probably one of the best campaigns I've seen in my life. So that's me. And what about you?
Okay, so we touched about some of the things I am playing regularly. My main campaign is Mask A New Generation. We are 30 plus sessions in with at least as much to still go on. It's a very good campaign. Really enjoying it. I was about a month ago, I started a new campaign for Dungeon World, the game that we played before on chat. And that's an interesting group because I have one player that is completely new to role-playing game. He played two one-offs in conventions, but he never played in a campaign or anything like that. I have one player that is new to Power by the Apocalypse. He has read the books but never played them. And I have another player that is one of the players from my other campaign, so he's a veteran, he knows the system and anything. And I used a very cool system that I lifted from the game Demigods to create the starting situation for the groups and everything. And it turns out we are playing something like a half pirate adventure, half a religious war tensions in the city. That's very weird, and I like it, so that's cool. And like I said in the beginning, I have joined real life meat space group as a player for the first time in 3 years. And we are playing a system that's completely new to me, Genesis, which is the
latest
iteration of the system from Star Wars Edge of the Empire and all of its other books, with the weird dice with symbols on them that I still am not able to remember what they do, but I only had one session. We are playing in the world of Eberron, which is a world that came to life for D&D 3rd edition after Wizards of the Coast did a competition to find a new setting. And it's kind of like post-industrialization, techno-magitech with World War One vibes and stuff like that. Very cool, very interesting setting. So I'm looking forward to keep playing that. We are only playing every other week, so it's going to be a bit slow. And the last thing is that I'm reading Blades in the Dark after wanting to learn that system a long time since it came out virtually, and testing it as a candidate for my own game. I'm on the fence in the moment because I'm for the past like 4 years I've been used to a Powered by the Apocalypse game and their specific way they merge setting with mechanics. And then I came into Blades, and on the one hand it does a lot of things I like, for example having a specific campaign structure and for the group to have a specific headquarters and stuff like that. And on the other hand, I read some of its adaptations, like A Band of Blade, which is a dark fantasy setting with the legion of soldiers running away from the horde of undead. And I look at how the new setting changed the rules, and it looks not as tight as I would have expected, but I want to finish reading it and then play it, and then I will come again and give a more thorough opinion.
That's the way to do it. Yes.
Yeah.
That was us. If you'd like to send us an email so we can read it on air and then address it, do so at show@dwarfcast.net. And we are also available on Twitter and in Facebook at Dwarf Podcast. You can also find us on the internet in dwarfcast.net. And finally, if you walk out into the street and shout out with all your heart and with all of your lungs, no, we won't come. We won't be there. but it will feel like
it will be fun.
Yes, it will be fun. It will be a cathartic moment for you, and then you'll think, "Ah, thank you, Dwarves. Thank you for giving me this cathartic moment." That was us. We will now say goodbye. Lehitraot!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Dio, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.